Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome one last time for 2024 to Melbourne Park, where you find myself, Catherine Whittaker, and Matt Roberts underneath a canopy of trees just overlooking Garden Square on some kind of beanbaggy type things. It's a strong end of slam energy out here. We've got seagulls circling, I'm sure mosquitoes biting, but it feels a very fitting place to record the final daily podcast of the 2024 Australian Open, where we've just seen Jannik Sinner become a Grand Slam champion. 3-6, 3-6, 6-4, 6-4, 6-3 over Daniil Medvedev, who has lost an Australian Open final from two sets to love up for the second time in 3 years. There is no David Law with us tonight. He's fine, but he is still under the weather, and he was desperate to come on tonight, but I had to put my foot down in his best interest. So hello David, get well to you. Hello Matt, good evening.
Hello. Yeah, we've had our eyes on these beanbags for the whole tournament, really, haven't we?
And a half weeks I've been thinking about these things.
Lots of fans have been sitting on them and we haven't had a chance, but the tennis podcast goes on after the last ball has been hit and we have seized our opportunity.
Like Jannik Sinner, we will outlast you and we will get those beanbags. For beanbags, read Australian Open Norman Brooks Trophy. Yep. Where do we start here, Matt? Do we start with Daniil Medvedev, heartbreak for him again? Do we start with Jannik Sinner, a Grand Slam champion? Do we start with you being denied chips at 3 minutes past midnight in the media cafe? Difficult to know what the lead is here.
I was fuming.
It was as angry as I've seen, Matt.
There were chips right there that they were, I don't know, throwing in a bin or something. But because I was apparently 3 minutes after the midnight on the dot deadline for ordering, I was not allowed to eat, and I was absolutely livid. I said, "We're here all night."
He said, "We are here all night." That was at the point that we were waiting for Daniil Medvedev and Jannik Sinner to come to press conferences. We had Darren Cahill and what's Vanyossi's first
Simone.
Name? Simone Vanyossi, the coaching team of Jannik Sinner, come to the press conference room to offer some really interesting insights, actually, to fill the time while we were waiting for the finalists. But we should start with Sinner, shouldn't we? Coming from two sets to love down to win your maiden Grand Slam title. How did he do it?
Well, you used the word outlasting just now, and I think that was a big part of it. It was such a fascinating tennis match. There were so many different aspects at play. Everything we spoke about last night, their recent head-to-head, felt like it influenced the first couple of sets because Daniil Medvedev came out with a different tactic. But He said in his press conference that that was mainly because of how he was feeling physically. He knew that he had to shorten the rallies, he had to be ultra aggressive. And he was brilliant in those first two sets, Daniil Medvedev. And I think he shocked Jannik Sinner. I think Sinner wasn't quite himself. But he got the break at the end of that second set. Sinner still didn't manage to win the set, but he just broke serve and just broke Medvedev's momentum a little bit. And I think at that point there, that was when the comeback started.
I wondered if you were going to pinpoint that game, actually, because failing to serve it out at 5-1 in the second set, even though he had that incredible cushion, I remember thinking, you know, Matt Roberts' voice, bookmark that game. and then, you know, that's one of those things that you only bring up if you turn out to be vindicated. But I do think that was the turning point, just getting a foothold in that second set, albeit losing it, that... With the benefit of hindsight, that was the momentum shift.
Yeah, it really was. And I think Darren Cahill mentioned that in his press conference as well, didn't he? And Medvedev, ever since his second round match that finished well into the early hours against Ruusuvuori, he has said after every match that he started to fatigue after two sets. And I think that happened again tonight. It definitely happened. You know, he tried to keep up that really aggressive approach, you know, but if mentally he was trying to do it, physically he wasn't quite able. And the rallies started to get a bit longer. They started to get a bit more on Jannik Sinner's terms. Jannik Sinner was able to open his shoulders and unleash those incredible arrow-like ground strokes that, again, as Darren Cahill just said, make a different sound to everyone else hitting a tennis ball. And Sinner took over that match. And I've rarely seen a tennis match where the momentum has swung so much, you know, based purely on how the players seem to be feeling. And yet, you know, it wasn't just a case of Medvedev completely fatiguing and Jannik Sinner strolling to victory. This was still Sinner trying to win his first Grand Slam title, coming from two sets down. He had so much to do still. And he managed to do it. He started serving a lot better. It was an absolutely awesome performance.
Medvedev said, yeah, look, I've been... things have been changing physically for me after two sets, pretty much since I destroyed myself against Emil Ruusuvuori at 3 o'clock in the morning. Or actually, since the first round, he said, against Terence Atman, who Medvedev revealed tonight. He was sort of 5 minutes away from... cramping against, and it until he noticed that Atman was cramping himself, and it was I don't know how that prevents you yourself from cramping, but anyway, he sort of did some interesting after the fact insight into that match. But he said the difference here was that the other guy didn't fatigue as well. He said, I've been fatiguing after two sets, but I've seen that the guy down the other end of the net has been as well, and that's been a boost to me. And it's felt like a situation I've been able to manage, and I've had second and third and fourth wins. But Jannik Sinner grew stronger as the match went on. I mean, I didn't see any sign of fatigue from him, and to think that that's the case, given how much stress he must have been under. I mean, every professional tennis player says stress is the most fatiguing thing, don't they? You know, they don't. These guys could practice all day long, couldn't they? It's matches that make them fatigued. God, he's a cool cucumber, isn't he, Jannik Sinner? Bloody hell.
And remember, there was a time not that long ago where he was our new why do I lose all the close matches guy. You know, end of 2022 and start of 2023, he kept losing in five sets at slams. I think he lost four straight five-set matches across the four different slams. And so, it feels quite fitting that this sort of levelling up of Sinner that, you know, has now made him a Grand Slam champion has come in this fashion. It's like that was the last thing he needed to kind of tick off. He'd had all these pretty one-sided matches through the tournament, but suddenly here he is, biggest match of his life, and he's in a fifth set against Medvedev. Okay, he's got the physical advantage, but he's still got to get over that line, and he just kept going after the ball and kept delivering, and he was sensational. And I think the atmosphere in the stadium was interesting as well, wasn't it? Because you know, suddenly when Sinner's two sets down, the crowd really start getting behind him. And Medvedev said in his press conference he was trying not to think about the Nadal match here 2 years ago. And I think, you know, it did feel like a different match. It took a similar scoreline and, you know, zooming out, it's still Medvedev losing a two-set lead. But I just think that, yeah, that experience that Daniil Medvedev we sort of thought would be to his advantage in this match, actually, when Jannik Sinner starts coming back at him, suddenly that experience is kind of like, oh, there's some demons there. And I think, you know, the whole crowd getting behind Sinner, Medvedev being fatigued, it just all suddenly started to go in Sinner's direction, and there was nothing quite that Medvedev, who didn't completely fall off a cliff, like he was still there, he still had break points in that fourth set, but against the sort of unstoppable Sinner, there was just nothing that Medvedev could quite do to arrest it once Sinner managed to turn the momentum.
Yeah, I found the Jannik Sinner comeback and the Medvedev fade, other than the physical element, I found it quite hard to read and analyse in the moment, because there was no tactical shift really that I noticed. I mean, Sinner definitely heard the if you don't have a good drop shot, I'm going to win the tournament line. He put that away completely tonight, didn't he? Maybe once or twice used it, but barely at all. And actually, Medvedev's volleying has been a bit of a revelation this tournament. I mean, not a, you know, he's the new Pat Rafter kind of way, but I had filed him away as don't ever come anywhere near the net, Daniil, before this tournament. And he showed he's got some skills,
yeah,
up there.
There was some very nice ones off his toes at times.
There were, and,
really,
and I think actually
me.
At one point Darren Cahill shouted to Sinner, don't give him the net.
Mm.
I mean, that's got to be a boost for Daniil in this slow moment. But yeah, it didn't feel like there was any weakness of either player that was being targeted. They both felt very even off the two wings, which, given the technique on Medvedev's forehand, is pretty extraordinary. Sinner was exceptional down the line. I thought he decided, I'm going to be the first one to go down the line in these rallies, and it's just such a smooth shot when he does that, particularly on the backhand, but he can do it on both wings. But yeah, it didn't feel like, oh, I found the scab I can pick at, or I've unlocked the cheat code. It just felt like a slow erosion and a slow toppling, I suppose, and kind of death by a thousand cuts for Medvedev. And losing from two sets to Love Up in two out of three Australian Open finals sounds terrible. He's the first guy in history to lose two Grand Slam finals from two sets of Love Up. It sounds awful. It sounds like the record of a choker. And yet, I just don't think of Medvedev that way at all. And I still don't after tonight.
I agree. And I think he hinted at it in his press conference, didn't he? Like, this match was partly lost in the previous rounds. You know, he played so much tennis coming into it, and he said he had to adopt a different approach because he knew there was no way he could go toe-to-toe with Sinner over five sets. You know, he had to shorten the rallies. And in a way, he's kind of overachieved, I think, a bit tonight, based on his own brilliance in those first two sets and his own willingness to change his game style. Like, it's ended up a really heartbreaking loss, the manner of it. But, like, there was a world there where he goes out and plays his usual game and loses in straight sets tonight to Jannik Sinner. And actually, I think today what he did was actually even more admirable. You know, the fact that he tried something, he knew that he had to change up his game plan, and he did, and he just couldn't quite get it over the line. But it's... I don't view this one or the one against Nadal, and, you know, it was an all-time great coming back at him in that one. I don't view either as chokes. I don't view either as he's got a major problem when he gets two sets up. If you look at the individual circumstances of them, you can kind of explain them. I think the Nadal one was probably more in his control in a way. Like, he was just so physically depleted today. And he made such a good effort of it. But, you know, perhaps you could say he needs to find a way to win his previous rounds sort of more straightforwardly, and that would have helped him. But in the moment, it was like a triumph that he even managed to get that, I think, to five sets.
It's the most time anyone has ever spent on courts at a Grand Slam, more than 24 hours. That's ridiculous saying that. Hannah did an excellent tweet saying, well, if they're going to add an extra day to the Australian Open, better make good use of it. More than 24 hours on court, and the coverage David was watching on Channel 9 back home, they flashed up a graphic of the five players that have spent the longest time on court during a Grand Slam run, and you've got Alcaraz, US Open 2022, Nadal, Australian Open 2022, Murray, US Open 2012, and Wawrinka, US Open 2016. They all won the titles. Ooh. It's a lot of effort to not come away with the trophy, isn't it?
Yeah. And look, I think part of it as well was the two extraordinarily late finishes that Medvedev had. Like, I think not only were they physically grueling matches, but they just took more out of him because he got to bed, he said, I think 6 or 7 a.m. after the Rusevori match, and then at 5 a.m. after the Zverev match. And he said yesterday, the way he was feeling, he felt like he basically had no chance against Jannik Sinner because he felt awful after that Zverev match. And he's sort of done an incredible job to even get out on court. But yeah, it's not only the matches he's played, but it's the time of day they've happened and the impact they've had on his sleep and on his body. Like, and he said in his speech, didn't he, bless him, next year I'll try harder. Like, how can you try harder than what Daniil Medvedev has done this tournament?
He said something very profound in his press conference just now about how even though you've done better and you've achieved more, it hurts so much more to lose in the final than in the semi-finals or the quarter-finals. He was like, obviously I'm glad I won those matches, but if you win those matches and then don't win the trophy, it's actually kind of doubly painful. And that's the psychology I always apply when I say I wouldn't want to win a silver medal at the Olympics. In the world in which I'm choosing which medal I'd like to win at the Olympics, I'd rather win a bronze than a silver, because silver just feels like the most heartbreaking place to be. And it's really, again, it doesn't feel, even though I have no qualms with any of the outcomes of these finals, you know, the better player has won, of course. It doesn't quite feel right that Medvedev has played six Grand Slam finals and only won one.
Mm. And he knows how the effects of, like, losing a Grand Slam final can linger, because he mentions that last time he lost from two sets up in the Australian Open final, he had his worst season. And I think, you know, there was a lot going on that year, but I think he definitely feels like that loss took its toll and played a part in why he had that worst ever season. And you know, he's conscious that he doesn't want to let that happen again, you know. And I do think there is something to this new Medvedev a little bit, like in terms of trying not to let stuff linger. Like, they're going to happen. He's going to have blow-ups, he's going to have moments, but he's not going to let them sort of affect him longer term, I think. I think that feels like the big difference to me.
And I'm quite sold on new Medvedev. Mm. It's not quite as fun for us, but I'm quite sold on it being a real thing and not just a whim, you know, a New Year's whim. And I think he's had enough validation of it this tournament to continue with it. And he did say, didn't he, a couple of days ago, when I decide to do something, I really, really, really do it. Mm. And it does feel like that's what he's doing with new Medvedev. And he was asked about his heartbreaking speech here 2 years ago about the kid in him that had died and how desperately sad he was that he didn't get any appreciation from the crowd today. And he just said, I'm a different person now, didn't he? Potentially since his holiday in the Maldives only a few weeks ago. I haven't actually checked whether it was the Maldives. I just assume it's the Maldives because it's...
Because he's a tennis player.
A tennis player going on holiday.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
We need to have lots of what does it mean chat. So brace yourself for that. I'll give you a moment to... Oh, there are some circling seagulls. I'll give you a moment to prepare yourself while I tell you one last time this Australian Open about On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. They have sponsored us throughout this Australian Open and we are thrilled that that has been the case. And now, you probably know if you've been listening to all these shows, but I will tell you once again, On Location have incredible ticket, hospitality and travel packages available for pretty much any tennis tournament that's worth going to. Indian Wells, Miami, Madrid, Roland Garros, Wimbledon, the US Open and the Laver Cup. And most importantly, we've got a 10% discount code for Tennis Podcast listeners on 2024 Roland Garros VIP ticket packages, courtesy of Steve Fergal International Tennis Tours. Those packages not only include fabulous tickets to watch the tennis, but also access to cocktails, hors d'oeuvres, and generally contemporary and refined times at La Mezzanine at L'Orangerie. Now, we have that 10% discount code available to all Tennis Podcast listeners. That's on those Roland Garros ticket packages. And to buy one of those packages, just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast. toursfortennis.com/podcast. And the discount code to put in at the checkout is Clay Season, CLAYSEASON. And a reminder that we also have a 5% discount code available exclusively for friends of the Tennis Podcast. And that is applicable on all On Location tennis packages to all events besides the Olympics. So Indian Wells, Miami, Madrid, Wimbledon, US Open and the Laver Cup in Berlin. So to access that code, just become a friend of the Tennis Podcast. You'll get the code and you'll get all sorts of other fun things as well. So all of that is available to you. Thank you so much to On Location for being our partners throughout this Australian Open. Of course, terms and conditions do apply. Now, Jannik Sinner. He's a Grand Slam champion. He's a Davis Cup champion. He, as Daniil Medvedev pointed out to us several times in his press conference, is leading the race.
Someone's got to do that if Nadal's not here.
Exactly. What does it mean, Matt? What does the immediate future hold for Jannik Sinner?
Well, I would say, first of all, it means that I was wrong because I didn't necessarily think that Sinner would win a slam this year. I really felt like his end of season last year was very real. Like, it wasn't just a guy having a run at the end of the season and won't be able to carry it into the new season. Like, it did feel so different. The caliber of player he was beating, the tournaments that he was winning, the two wins over Novak Djokovic, all of it. Like, it was incredible, and we said so at the time. But I still felt like actually doing it at a slam might take some time, because he's that guy. He's the process guy. He's the one who takes the steps and then achieves the thing. And he's even better than I thought he was, I would say. Especially on a hard court. Like, I still think clay and grass can be very good surfaces for him, but this has all happened on a hard court, so, you know, we should wait to see him, you know, post-puke Sinner on the clay and on the grass. But I thought it was interesting what Darren Cahill said in answer to a question from Eleanor Crooks about how much has Alcaraz getting in there first sort of...
This question and answer was incredible.
Right. She said, how much has Alcaraz getting in there first motivated Sinner and, you know, sort of made him kick on? And has it made him kick on? Has it motivated him? And Darren Cahill said, hell yeah.
Such a good answer.
And I just thought that is so right, because, you know, we definitely had a conversation after Wimbledon when David predicted Carlos Alcaraz to win the next 12 slams. But look, the sort of basis of that conversation was Alcaraz might have a period here to dominate the sport. You know, he might have a period of men's tennis kind of on his own. And we said, once someone does that, look at what Federer did, eventually people will catch you up. That's just how things work, you know.
Are you saying he's wasted his window?
I'm saying Jannik Sinner has maybe not completely closed the window, but, like, he's right there with Alcaraz now. He has to be, especially on the hard courts, as I said. Like, he's got the good head-to-head against Alcaraz. He can now beat everyone else. He's won 10 of his last 11 matches against top 5 players. And it feels like, look, I still think Alcaraz... I'm still a huge believer in Carlos Alcaraz. He's going to win many, many more major titles. I believe that. He's still the guy to me whose game I find the most exciting, just personally. But Sinner is, like, such a force. He understands his own game, I think, maybe better than Alcaraz does at the moment.
Such a good way of putting it.
Right?
Such a good way of putting it. Sinner is the more mature player. And we should point out that he is 2 years older than Alcaraz, right? And they're so in the same bracket and have been in the same bracket. But actually, Sinner does have that much more experience. He's had more opportunity to be methodical. And Alcaraz's prodigious breakthrough so early kind of it bypassed so many of the steps in the process, right? And maybe he needs to go back a bit and be more process led. God's a lot of chat about the process. Wait till you hear him start talking about mindset. There was a lot of that in the press conferences as well. But yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. Just totally knowing his game. And Alcaraz has got work to do there.
Yeah. I think, again, I've been a bit guilty in the past of really viewing Jannik Sinner, like, through a Carlos Alcaraz lens. Like, Jannik Sinner was never more exciting to me than when he was playing Carlos Alcaraz. And maybe I still feel that to some degree. But I think through these tournaments that he's won, you know, the Davis Cup, here at the Australian Open, like, Alcaraz hasn't been in the equation, and I've found it thrilling to watch Jannik Sinner. Like, I've really started to really enjoy his game, watching him move the way he does, side to side, getting so low, being so strong, and on the stretch, I find just sort of mesmerizing. And then just the way he hits the ball, like, He's like sort of the anti-Michael Moe. I'm sorry to him for catching strays. But you know when we watch Michael Moe and you think, how does he not hit the ball bigger?
Yeah.
And for Yannick Sinner, it's like, how does he hit the ball like that? I find it kind of mesmerising, the timing, the core strength that he has. Like, he's so explosive, and I've loved watching his matches up close this tournament. And I think he's just more of a star than I'd realised, I suppose.
Mm, he's a particular type of star, but he is. Gucci know what they're doing.
They do.
That is what we've learned from today. That was another thing that struck me about the match today. Sitting there watching it from, we were in slightly higher press seats today just because of the sheer volume of demand. And I mean, they're still great seats, but it's just that bit further up in. It does affect the way you view the match, I think. And I was just so struck by the absolutely ridiculous movement of these two incredibly tall, quite lanky guys, right? Like, back in the day, men of that stature, that would be a meat and potatoes tennis game that they would have. And they're moving like Ron Courier. Oh, my God. I've accidentally shouted out Federico Coria, younger brother of Guillermo Coria, who I actually wanted to shout out. Unbelievable. I mean, I know the ATP bio says that Yannick Sinner is only 6'2", but we have issues with that, don't we? I mean, Daniel Medvedev's 6'6", I think. Sinner's not far off that. 6'4", at least, I would say. These are tall guys. You know, generally 6'1", 6'2" is considered the optimum height for a tennis player. And sort of there's diminishing returns from that point onwards. But these are just superhero type players with all of the benefits of being tall and none of the weaknesses. It's pretty ridiculous, really, how they move, both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And just interesting for Medvedev saying that he feels like he's kind of at the stage in his career now where actually maybe he needs to start adapting his game style.
He said, I'm 27
style.
Now.
I'm getting old.
And then he said, for you, that man.
Then he said, I'm still super young. I was like, well, which one is it, Daniil? And like, I think, you know, those first two sets, how aggressive he was, like, that might be a Daniil Medvedev we see a little bit more often, perhaps. I don't think so. I don't think he's going to completely change his DNA as a tennis player. But
the
like,
thing is,
he was just more efficient.
That would have been the play even if he hadn't been tired, right?
Well, he said,
easy to say now, having seen how well it worked for two sets. But surely that was the play, regardless of how he felt. But maybe it focused his mind.
Yes, and it made him totally commit to it.
Yeah.
He said, didn't he, that if he'd been feeling physically strong, he probably would have decided with his coach, let's make it physical and see if I'm coming out on top. Like, that probably would have been his game plan. Like, try and come out on top physically.
Well, that wouldn't have worked, looking at Sinner tonight. I mean,
I don't know. If Medvedev had a full tank, maybe.
Maybe.
But
he
unlikely,
looked like he could have gone
Sinner
for another
was,
couple of sets.
Sinner was so strong in that match and all tournament. And again, that's all part of the development and the work that he's put in. I remember there was a point last year where I thought he just looks stronger on the court, Sinner. He didn't change body type, but he said he'd put on some muscle, hadn't he? And he just looked...
Start of last season, I think it actually might have been after the Australian Open... Before Indian Wells, I remember Yannick Sinner saying Darren Cahill rather saying that he'd put on some muscle in a non-dramatic way.
Yeah. He just looked more stable. It's all part of this development that's been happening for years, but has accelerated in the last few months.
It's going to be an arms race now for the first slam to get a Sinner Alcaraz final, isn't there? And I know
me.
The US Open will feel like they deserve it because they never got Federer, Nadal. But then they have had Sinner Alcaraz.
The Sinner Alcaraz,
just in a semi-final. What about Daniil Medvedev? At the moment, he's a one-slam wonder. Does he stay that way? Is there, as great as he is there always going to be someone that's a bit better?
I think he'll get another slam. I do. Like, he's so consistent. He's so often there in the final.
And he is going to try harder. He's pledged us that.
But yeah, like, his head-to-heads against Sinner is going the wrong direction. That's now 6-4, four in a row for Sinner. Alcaraz, look, he beat him in that US Open, but generally Alcaraz had the better of that head-to-head. And as long as Djokovic is around, Djokovic has tended to get the better of him as well. So it's very tough, but he's such a good player on a hard court, a specialist, you could say, that I do think he'll get another hard court slam.
Just got to keep putting himself in the positions, hasn't he?
Yeah. And look, I fully expect Jannik Sinner to kick on. But, you know, we did our Australian Open relived on Novak Djokovic winning in 08. And it feels like there's slightly different stages of their career. But it took Djokovic 3 more years to win another slam. Like, we don't know what this will do to Jannik Sinner in the way that I don't think we would have predicted what's happened to Carlos Alcaraz since Wimbledon. Like, they're still... Like, Alcaraz is fine, I think. I really am not worried about Carlos Alcaraz generally. And I think Sinner will most likely kick on from this. But, you know, you just don't know. And Medvedev is reliably there. And I think that sort of counts for quite a lot.
Yeah, you can have that plastered across a T-shirt. Reliably there. Sexy stuff. I'm going to ask you a really tough question now, because I can. And because who doesn't love a bit of potential recency bias? Who out of Alcaraz and Sinner...
Oh, I knew you were going to say this.
Who out of Alcaraz and Sinner is having the better career?
At the moment, I still think Alcaraz has the edge. As you said, he is younger. He's already ahead in that, you know, he has one extra major. He's been to world number one. And I do think the surface thing maybe comes into it. Like, Sinner's shown great performances on clay and grass. He has. But I don't think he's quite... Certainly on grass, he hasn't shown what Alcaraz has by winning Wimbledon and Queens. And it just feels like Alcaraz is going to get it together at the French Open before too long. I don't think we've quite seen the best Alcaraz at the French Open yet. So I would give the edge to Alcaraz, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than I would have said even a few months ago. Like, I think they're going to be pretty neck and neck. I think Sinner is awesome.
Just one last thing with Sinner that I wanted to touch upon was what he said in his speech. At the very end of his speech, actually, look, he's not a razzle-dazzle guy, Jannik Sinner. His speech was pretty much what we're expecting. I think lovely, but no, you know, nothing that we noted down to mention on the podcast until one of his very last lines, which was about his parents who aren't here at this tournament. They didn't do a Joe Wilfried Tsonga parent thing and fly in for the final, which... as we discovered or reminded ourselves on Tennis Relived, really kind of unsettled Tsonga and piled extra pressure on their back home in Italy in, what did he say, minus 20 degrees? And he thanked them, but he thanked them in a very unique way. He said, he talked about how he did lots of sports as a kid, and it's well documented how great a skier he was, and he had the opportunity probably to turn pro at skiing, and he said, they never ever pushed me. Tennis was a choice for me, and I'm so grateful to them that is the case, and I hope other kids are afforded that space and generosity by their parents. And I absolutely don't think it was pointed at all at the myriad pushy parents that this sport boasts, but it was quite a powerful grown-up message, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily pointed, just because Yannick Sinner's not...
He's not that guy.
He's not that guy, is he? But I think he would know that it's an advantage or a privilege that he's got over other players. He will have seen the impact that parents may have had negatively on their child's career, even if they want the best for them. And I think, you know, he said, I wish everyone could have my parents. You know, it was really special, actually. Mm. And I thought it was an incredible message, actually. And just sort of recognizing the role that they've played, even if they weren't physically here, like they're sort of with him and always have been. And I thought it was very touching and very special. Mm. and very important, actually. Like, parents of potential champions in this sport should be hearing that and listening to that.
Do you know who else wasn't here?
David.
Well, yes, David. The Carotta boys.
Oh, gosh, yes. They were here.
You're a professional carrot. You're a semi-professional carrot supporting Yannick Sinner. And you're not there for the biggest moment of his career.
They were there for Boutique van der Zandschulp in round one.
I believe it's because, shocker, they've got jobs. And they were unable to make a second trip to Australia.
Is it tough for them that, like, Sinner doesn't need them?
Yeah, I mean,
he can do it without
them. I honestly think this could be the end for them. I don't know. I mean, they're onto a good thing, flying around the world dressed as carrots.
I think they've done their career slam now, haven't they? They've been to all the slams. Mm.
And now they're just going back to work in IT or something. What you've been up to? Oh, you know, just carrot stuff. Yeah, sorry. Our thoughts are with the Carotta boys at this very difficult time. That wasn't the only final that was played today. We also had the women's doubles final that was also on the Rod Laver Arena earlier on in the day. And we watched most of this. Matt watched pretty much all of it and was enthralled once again by the majesty and the magic of Shay Suwei, who, alongside Lisa Mertens, won the title 6-1, 7-5 over Ludmila Kichanok and Yelena Ostapenko. And it's the Shay double. I mean, of course it's the Shay double. She looks absolutely unbeatable.
She is a marvel. I mean, she now holds four different majors with four different partners across two different disciplines, you know, women's doubles and mixed doubles. She obviously won with Jan Zielinski here, the mixed, and now the women's with Elise Mertens, and she won Wimbledon last year and the French Open last year with Strzyzkova and Wong. And, like, that is incredible. Like, she is so adaptable. She's such a good doubles player, such a good sense of the court, such good hands. I must say, I thought Elise Mertens was probably the MVP today. I do think she did a lot of the sort of heavy lifting in this match. It was a very entertaining match. It was exactly why I prefer women's doubles to men's doubles, because there were actually really good and interesting rallies. And you do get some in men's doubles, but they're, you know, they tend to be really fast-paced, reaction-based rallies, whereas this was a lot of moonballing, a lot of lobs, a lot of players having to move over different sides of the court all the time. And it was just a sort of fascinating watch. And I thought Elise Mertens was pulling a lot of those strings. And, it's their second Grand Slam title together. They won Wimbledon a few years ago. And, they make a really great team. They're very different sort of personalities, I think.
Very different everything.
Very different everything. But they really gelled together. And yeah, it was a really fun match.
There were lots of rallies that made you sort of chuckle a bit in the middle, which was, it was great. It was really entertaining. And I mean, Shay Serrae is never not entertaining. It's going to be fascinating to see what she wins this year and with who. Presumably her phone is blowing up with offers. Yeah, absolutely incredible. She also confirmed that she's not really retiring, even from singles. The retirement that she announced is retiring from Grand Slam singles, which I think is why she didn't get a cake. Because
it's niche, isn't it?
It's pretty niche. She's going to continue playing tour events in singles, and obviously she's going to continue playing everything in doubles and potentially winning everything as well. And we are here for it, but you don't get cake until it's the very end. That should be the rule. So I think that's just about it for AO 2024. People are starting to stream past us. People in uniforms are leaving. There's a lot of rubbish in Garden Square to be cleaned up. Journalists are starting to leave. The last media shuttle departs in 14 minutes. Not sure we're going to be on it, but we'll see. It's been... Look, there have been ups and downs in this tournament, haven't there? And it's been a shame for us to end it without David. But there have been a lot of ups. There's been good times at this tournament.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, honestly, I probably will look back on this tournament as one of the toughest that I've done in terms of trying to cover it. And I think we're all still feeling the loss of Mike Dixon during this tournament. It's been really hard, and obviously just for us not having David the last couple of days is also really hard. But on court, like as always with these slams, I'm always amazed at the number of stories and matches that they get thrown up. And you know, we've got two incredible champions and a lot of great stories to get to those champions as well. And hopefully we'll be able to offer a bit more perspective on it on our review show. Like right now it's all sort of quite overwhelming, as it always is, but like the slams just always deliver. Like we're so lucky that we get four of them a year.
Yeah, when Daniil Medvedev started talking about Terence Atman in his press conference, I was like, that was 400 years ago, Daniil. What are you talking about? Couldn't remember the guy's name. Matt pulled Terence out of somewhere. I was very impressed by that. Yeah, it's exactly as Matt said, it's been challenging for us in lots of ways. And the loss of Mike Dixon is something that we haven't been able to fully process, because you're in a kind of vortex at these things, aren't you? You're on a hamster wheel, and it's an exhilarating, fun hamster wheel, and you wouldn't want to be anywhere else, but it does kind of shield you from reality in lots of ways. So, it's been tough in that respect, but there's nowhere else we'd have wanted to be these past 2 weeks, and tennis is always there. And we're very grateful for that.
Yes, I saw a tweet that Andy Murray has drawn Benoit Paire in Montpellier. And I was like, tennis.
That's the bad side of tennis always being there. Like, tennis cannot be there just for a day or two, can't it? Wow. Yeah, Montpellier's kicking off. Hua Hin is kicking off for the WTA.
Linz.
It never stops. We're going to stop for a day, but then we'll be back on Tuesday. We're going to be recording some bonus content for Friends of the Tennis Podcast. Now, the plan is for us to do a live Q&A show Tuesday morning, Australian time. So that'd be Monday evening, UK time, and earlier in the afternoon or evening, US time. Full disclosure, we don't know how David's going to feel. We're going to make a decision on that 24 hours out. So that'll be tomorrow morning, our time. We might already have made that decision by the time that you're listening to this. And we will communicate it in an email, of course, to all Friends of the Tennis Podcast. But even if it's not live on Tuesday morning, it will be live sometime very soon indeed. So health permitting for David, we still do hope to do it Tuesday, but please bear with us if it's not. We will be recording an Australian Open review show with voice notes. That will be our opportunity to process the fortnight in big picture terms.
And get David's takes.
He has got takes.
You know he's got takes.
Takes to burn, folks. So yes, those will be coming for friends of the Tennis Podcast over the next few days. So lots of reasons to become a friend of the podcast, not least, of course, supporting us in being here at these slams, reporting on the tennis and the press conferences and on the sport in the way that it deserves to be reported on. It's not a given that journalists come out to these events and cover them. And that's something, to their great credit, Tennis Australia really understand. You know, they know it's a big deal for people to come all this way and cover this event. And we've got three of us here doing it, and we're very proud to be able to do that. But that is because of you, friends of the Tennis Podcast. So thank you ever so much for your support. And thank you in particular to Usher for being our mascot throughout this fortnight. Usher, you're a legend. Thank you to our individual mascots. I will thank Francis on David's behalf. Don't think David disgraced Francis, did he? I mean, I'm not sure any of us excelled, but...
No, mid-table finish for David.
Great.
Very West Brom.
Right. Oh, I mean, tough scene for West Brom today. Anyway, not a mid-table finish for me and Darwin, but we'll try harder, like Daniel Medvedev, next time. Matt, for you, Haider and Soma, respectable.
Mid-table finish, very Fulham.
Should we mention at this point Keturah?
Yes, she was the only one of our newsletter predictors to have Jannik Sinner in five. And if you read the newsletter and thought, no, she didn't, that was very much my mistake. I gave her Sinner in four, but she did actually say Sinner in five. But shout out to Hannah in our predictions, who won our newsletter predictions competition. She's blown us away. She was awesome.
I always think when these amazing listeners come along and just thrash us in predictions, I'm like, why don't you have a tennis podcast? What are we doing? Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Ilana Kloss. We have top folks and executive producers Greg, Chris, Jamie and Jeff. And we won't do shout-outs tonight because what is a shout-out without David Law? But we will, if you allow us a moment of indulgence, shout-out some very important people that help us tremendously throughout these incredibly hectic Grand Slam fortnights. And in particular, the last 2 weeks, we have Woolly, who does an awful lot for us. We have Hannah, of course, who runs our Twitter, who is writing articles for us this year. The first of her articles is available now on our website if you want to have a look at that. It's about Grigor Dimitrov and it has aged brilliantly, I think. Of course, an incredible piece of work, and she'll be continuing to do incredible pieces of work like that for Friends of the Tennis Podcast throughout this year. We have Gorana, our designer, who's done incredible work for us on the newsletter over the course of the past 2 weeks. We have cameraman Matthew, who actually hasn't worked with us at all over this fortnight, but has generally brought good vibes, I think.
It was great having cameraman Matthew here. He just makes us feel better.
He's a part of the team, even when he's not officially a part of the team, and even when he's
not listening and to the pod and not reading the newsletter,
trying to gaslight me into believing that I hadn't had a haircut. You've always had short hair. No.
And his other gem this tournament was, I knew Matt before you did, Catherine. I knew Matt when he worked for the LGA.
Yeah. Fake news. He also tried to convince us it was 2022.
We love Matthew.
Never a dull moment with Matthew. So thank you to all these people for bringing the vibes, bringing the hard work. It takes an army. And David, if you're listening, which you are, get well soon.
Get well soon, David.
Thank you all for listening. It's been a cracking Australian Open for Friends of the Pod. We'll be with you in the coming days. For anybody else listening, we'll be back with a show next Monday. It is a joy to produce these shows. Thank you. One last time from Melbourne Park 2024. We will speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.